Will you look at this chaplain's activities summary for 5 years of service? Indicated in this is not combat duty that I can see. I can't see too much of it. You will notice that he has a number of different kinds of services, like general Protestant. Look at his Lutheran services. Look at his joint Lutheran services, civilian Lutheran services, hospital services, radio services, and notice that persons affected from the 49 radio services is zero. You don't put this in. One chaplain put it in a report once, and I think then they changed the rules on it. He put in 30 million people by his radio services. All right. Guardhouse services. For some reason, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod chaplains get the guardhouse. I think that's for being Orthodox. The other chaplains say, all right, the stuffed shirt, conservative, Orthodox Lutheran, let him have the guardhouse. I don't know why it is, but you'll find that the old Lutheran chaplain is the fellow that usually takes care of the guardhouse, although this man got off very light with only 9 services in 5 years. He was a supervisory chaplain for some length of time because he visited 187 services. He arranged 163. I think this is small, incidentally. This is light for me. Bible classes, this is light. Sunday schools, this is quite light in view of what's going on in permanent type cantonments today. And catechetical instruction, 73 with 118. This was private catechetical instruction. You see, you have less than 2 people in each instance. You will discover that he did most of the pastoral acts. I don't think he missed anything here. Didn't say confessions and absolutions. He had addresses quite extensively. He had pastoral visits all around the place, even to POWs, that's prisoners of war. He had personal consultations, quite a few. And if you will turn over, you will see that he went to conferences. I think he did real well on his civilian clergy conferences. You will notice that he had quite a few chaplains' conferences, and I kid you not, these things come along. You do have them. And you will, if you're a staff officer, you'll be putting your feet in the path down to headquarters or wherever to have a staff officer's conference every other day or so. He had any number, quite a few, officers' meetings, chaplains' meetings, committee meetings, choir rehearsals, Water League, staff meetings, pastoral conferences, which were joint affairs. He arranged programs, he attended special functions, and he attended, look, how many? Personal, individual instances of training sessions. Boy, look how this adds up. You will note the grand total. Now let's see what happened. The chaplain who rendered this report served a total of 1,825 days during the 5-year period. Now let's add up 365 days and see what happens. 5 5 is 25, 32, 15, 1,825 days. Now, according to the SOP, ordinarily, you get 30 days leave. In combat situations and so on and so on, you add up your leave. You don't take it. You don't get it. And it accrues. You get it after you are dismissed or discharged. But if you took away five years of this and say, well, just for a good measure, let's take away 100 days in which he's not doing all these things, you have 1,725 days. Now, divide the 1,725 into the 87,292. You will come out with an average of, at least the way I have it here, is 48 persons each day that were affected in some way by his being there and in contact with them. either with them or before them or individually with them or in a service with them, it averaged 48 persons a day. Now, I have given you this to show you the many different activities in which this man is involved, the occasions, the times, like 12,231 occasions, and what would this be every day? How many occasions would it be? You do your own arithmetic if you want, using this figure. This is a legitimate figure. And then imagine how day after day after day, in different types of contacts, 48 persons are involved. And this is just about the way you have to go. You cannot hide. You have to go out and be present and visible and make your ministry. And you simply build bridges in various ways by which you can go to the troops and the troops can come to you. And what you want to do is not necessarily emulate the timid man and the one who is, what's the old corny saying about he's visible one day a week and highly invisible the other days or something. You don't want to emulate the invisible people, chaplains, but the man who's visible and the man who is making at least, I'd say, in one form or another, an average of about 50 contacts a day. This is the answer to the chaplain's success. Any questions on this? The figures at the bottom of the page are old. This is an old sheet of paper. This was Chaplain Walter Hoopthausen, incidentally, who now is retired, and he's doing something special in the church, and I forget what it is. Does anyone know? It doesn't matter. Any questions? No questions. You will, the next thing I would want to tell you, or hold up here before you, is this business of serving different kinds of religious tradition. Have we talked about you and relationships with other Lutherans? Has anybody mentioned this? Pardon? Cross communion with other Lutherans when there's no other Lutheran chaplain to serve. I believe that we're doing this quite generally. The regulation, in quotes, on it by the Armed Services Commission is that these emergency, in quote, situations are not to be escalated. In other words, an LCA chaplain would say, I will play golf this Sunday or go fishing and you take care of the Lutherans this Sunday. Next Sunday you take off and I will take care of all the Lutherans. This is not the way we would like for this to happen. When there is no other Lutheran chaplain available to serve these people, you serve Lutheran people. This is the rule of thumb. Now, in exceptional situations where a member of one group earnestly seeks admission to the Lord's Supper conducted by a representative of the other group, where a member of that group of Lutherans would want to come over and be a member of your group. See? The individual case in each instance will be considered by the pastor concerned. It is agreed that in such cases, particular synodical membership of a Lutheran in the armed forces shall not be a required condition for admission to the Lord's Supper. Now, beyond this, it is agreed that the chaplain may commune such men and women in the armed forces as are conscious of the need of repentance and hold to the essence of faith, including the doctrines of the real presence and of the Lord's Supper as a means of grace, and profess acceptance thereof. This did not use the word Lutheran. It said such men and women in the armed forces. You can very well be in a situation where you will be the only chaplain. And in this situation, it is chaplain to person. relationship. And it is, therefore, the chaplain's responsibility to ask the right questions and receive, hopefully, the right answers, and to do the instruction that is necessary and build up around him a congregation in fellowship. Any questions on this? What would you do? May I ask you to get into this a little bit? I'll set up a situation for you. Suppose you were in a complex of bunkers, and this could happen. Suppose your troops discovered in Vietnam a livable underground complex, and you moved in. It would hold about 1,500 men, and you would move in there to live. You were in a combat situation where mobility and movement was somewhat restricted. I could further complicate this by saying that maybe this whole unit would be under cover preparing for an attack, studying, organizing, getting themselves equipped, getting the battle plan all figured out, ready to jump off, everybody be committed. You are the chaplain. Now, when we talked about coverage, you would very well bestir yourself and would get the services of a Catholic chaplain. Now, you wouldn't try to serve the Catholic men in there. But beyond this, in an emergency, you might be the only chaplain. But beyond this, you might, together with the Catholic chaplain, Roman Catholic chaplain, be the only people to serve the whole group. And you would announce services, and out of these bunkers would come 500 men calling themselves with P or whatever on their dog tag. It's not P anymore, I think it goes by church. But they'd have a lot of stuff on their dog tag, like Methodist and Presbyterian and Baptist and so on. And they'd come to your services. Now, what would you do about Holy Communion? Would you just go for 2 or 3 months? Suppose this thing was static. Suppose you went as long as a month. Would you have no communion service? Would you have a communion service only for the Lutherans? Would you get another chaplain in to have a general Protestant service? Now, answer the question first. Would you have no communion services? Well, I think this is unthinkable. Would you have communion services just for Lutherans? Would you try to get another Protestant chaplain in to have a general Protestant communion service? Yes, you would. Suppose you couldn't. Would you do nothing? Would you simply take the Lutherans by secret announcement and get off in a corner somewhere and have communion with the Lutherans and let the rest go? Don't you know that in a situation like this, the Lutheran fellows have buddies and friends, and that there has been Christian conversation going? Don't you know that some of these fellows have already been instructed? That there are men that would come with their Lutheran buddies or their Christian buddies and would sincerely wish Holy Communion? Now, how are you going to get with this? Well, you're going to do something you'll never do in the States, most likely, and you've never done before in your life. Now, it's a little bit too simple to say that you could do what Paul Henkel did once upon a time, about 1800, in this country, when he happened to be the home missionary for the Pennsylvania Ministerium.
He's one of those guys that hangs up there in the library along with that cluster of old fellows called the Hinkle. He went to frontier places and gathered up motley crowds of people who had no pastor whatsoever. Very much the same situation. And here were Germans mixed with Scotch-Irish. And here were every kind of thing, background. And he was accused by some of his fellow clergymen in the Pennsylvania ministerium of practicing open communion. And his reply was this, that when I preach to a group of people on the subject of the Holy Sacrament, of the Lord's Supper, and on repentance and faith, and on the body and blood given and shed for you, for the remission of sins, for 2 hours, I open and close the situation by the Word of God. Now, this doesn't mean that the chaplain is going to have 2 hours to do it. But if he has anything going for him among the troops in the lives of these people during a week before this service would ever happen, this chaplain would be a busy guy. And with his own Lutheran troops, he would set up some method by which they could do the proper witness and could be surety for these fellows who would come. Do you get it? And particularly, is this a concern before combat? Now, this gets us to this combat situation. We heard in my youth, I heard a lot about joint prayer and prayer fellowship and prayer unionism or whatever you want to call it. But brother, you get down on a river, you get in these dugouts, and the fellows have all their equipment there. And you push aside these Bangalore torpedoes, and they're going to open up minefields when they get across. And they've got everything ready to go across the river, and you know it's going to be a deadly fire, and in 2 or 3 hours, all the trees will be stripped and the houses knocked down and everything else, and the fellows will be right in this. You go from dugout to dugout to dugout the evening before, and you have people who are, in their own way and out of their own situation, they're reaching up to hang on to something. And I'm telling you, this denomination business and everything else fades out, and the crucial question is there. The crucial questions come right up for. You know, an old tough sergeant will offer a prayer with his men at this time. He wouldn't ordinarily do it, and he may never do it again. But when you say, "Sergeant, say some words to God for your platoon," he'll do it here. And the old tough sarge, when he does that, it just does something for the whole group. Now, these aren't sophisticated, living Christian people. But when you get into this crucial moment, it's almost like a bedside deal, or it's a terminal illness, because nobody is going to put any bets whether he's going to come out of it or not. They just don't. There are no Weisenheimers there. Old Captain McNamara, Roman Catholic. If I got my book of stuff I collected, I have a picture in an old beaten-up German church with a hole, shell hole, right behind the pulpit, gaping hole. And there are no seats at all, pews left. The troop is standing in this church, and in the chancel there's all sorts of stuff stacked up there that they tried to save. And somebody, some public relations person, took a photograph of that group, and I saw it in print after the war somewhere, and I sent a copy to Captain Mack, the captain of this reconnaissance troop who was in Korea. I don't know whether he came out alive or not. He sent me a Christmas card from there. And old Captain Mack, he's right there in the middle, and the officers are there. But Captain Mack would know that his little reconnaissance troop, armed to the teeth, automatic weapons and pistols slung all over and everything, machine guns on their jeeps, scout cars with 50 caliber machine gun with 37 millimeter cannon that's right in tandem with the machine gun, and you just spray tracer bullets until you're knocking them off that old tank down there, then you kick the treadle with your foot and that 37 millimeter thing goes right by those bullets. It just passes them up like they're standing still and wango in that tank. That's the way you shoot the 37 millimeter, by spraying the machine gun until you are bouncing the bullets off the target and then bingo. All right, Captain Mack and his gang will run out on left flank tomorrow morning, and he knows it. And the way it's been going, he'll know that about 15 men out of this outfit, if they hit anything, will get it. And so he says, Chaplain, we're off in the morning. You better get down here. We're having, like, before they hang you, we're having a good meal. We've got fried chicken tonight. And when you're out in a combat situation, that's a pretty good deal. You get all of these you can. So you go down and you get in the line. And you pass the word around that service is after dinner. And you knock out their mess gear. The whole troop gets out in the courtyard or under the apple trees or wherever they can if the situation permits. And they all sit there saying to you, say the word. And this is almost a man. Well, there weren't many Jewish people, incidentally, in infantry division, or at least in the recon troop. They have skills and other things by which they persuade the government to use them somewhere else. This is an interesting thing. I don't know what it says about the people, but they just weren't there. So what you had were Protestants and Catholics almost all the way. I don't remember there being a Jewish man in this recon outfit. Now, you don't, in this case, at least I didn't, distribute or celebrate Holy Communion for that old bunch. This was just a little bit too much. The Roman Catholics would stand for prayers and the Word of God and the Word. But Holy Communion would have been, I think, more divisive in this situation, if I may say it that way. I may have to explain that someday. In the administration of the Lord's Supper, chaplains are encouraged in all cases to take a sympathetic and evangelical attitude toward the men and women in the armed services. Now, let's get down to tax here. What would the chaplains in Vietnam be doing? This idea of a chaplain being out on the front lines and holding the hands of the soldier, you know, and kneeling down there beside the wounded man with bullets flying around and so on, is pretty much false. Any chaplain who would do that would be called front and center and given a good reading on it. We had a chaplain that happened to be involved where he was not supposed to be in the first place, but it happened. A tank got shelled and he helped pull the men out of the tank that was on fire. And he exposed himself. And it was a good Christian thing to do. But 2 days later, we had a chaplain's meeting, and the corps chaplain heard about this, and he gave the man the riot act right in front of the whole group of chaplains. And he said, I don't fault you for what you did, but I fault you for being there. You are not expendable in this way, that you should have been running around up there. And you do not expose yourself needlessly. This doesn't mean, though, that you hide between a tank, for example, and a building, while it's being, the whole thing's being shelled and the world's coming apart. And then when the tank leaves and the shelling stops, you still stay there. See, you can get down. It's awfully hard to move, incidentally, when you are in a situation like this. I mean, in a combat situation where it sounds exactly like it sounds on TV. and your hair's being parted, and your ears are ringing, and dust is all over the place, and the world's coming apart. And when some old sergeant or some captain says, "Get the hell out of here," it is awfully hard to move. It is really hard to go. But chaplain is not to push himself into these places needlessly. Now what happens? Today, men are gotten back, wounded, are gotten back to what they call definitive treatment by a helicopter, usually faster than they were gotten back even to maybe the battalion aid station, which was the second place in World War II on ground combat. I would say that your turn will come to be where the wounded is brought back to be loaded, given what they call first aid right there. Anything you do, get on the bottle, and put on a bandage and a tourniquet or whatever. First aid business. To load him on the helicopter and you'd be there. But that helicopter is not going to stay there while you repeat the Apostles' Creed and the Lord's Prayer, even that. He's going to be impatient with you even saying the First Amendment. And what the chaplain does in this place is give support. And fellow, you must be all right. And you say it this way, not that you are going to be all right. You must be all right because God takes care of his own. Hang on. Just swoop back, take off. Bless you. When this man lands at the place behind, triage takes place. And if the helicopters are moving him into any loading area, and you'll often walk into a place where men are just stretched out, this one turning gray from loss of blood, this one from shock, and so on and so on, this with gaping wounds, and they're doing everything they can to move these people in the right place to take care of the ones that need to be taken care of and the ones who can wait. And this is called triage. If you're in a hospital situation, this is the word banded around quite a bit. And they will put tags on these people and they immediately go into a sequence, care and training. And here a chaplain moves into this, and by the tag and what's on there, he does what is indicated. You'll learn this at chaplain school, or you'll learn exactly what this procedure is. You'll know whether he's a Roman Catholic, you'll know whether he's a Jew, you'll know so on. And there are usually two chaplains. This is any size thing, Catholic or Protestant. If it gets larger, then they double up on the chaplain, collected station, and moved into what is called, you might call it, emergency treatment. And then these men move on back, go on back. And then chaplains can be at, whether they call it a clearing station over there, I don't know. But this would be like the first hospital, and then the next hospital. Or they are not putting them in those hospitals. The hospitals are here. They're loading them on planes, and back we go. Do you know whether a chaplain flies in a hospital plane?
No,
he's there when they're loaded.
Yeah, and when they're unloaded.
And unloaded, and he has something in the plane, blesses the flight, all of us. Yes. Now this is about the way the chaplains would work in emergency situations, in these tight situations, crucial, critical situations with patients, people, soldiers. Now, I imagine Sam Hoard over there, the way he writes, is bouncing around all over the place, collecting groups of soldiers together and having services. I imagine he's into any houses they're living in, and any little group of soldiers anywhere he can get to under his care. He gathered these fellows up, and like they used to do in Europe, they'd go in and they'd kick the rubble around in a bar room or a stable or anywhere, it didn't matter. Wherever you could get troops together, and you had the words about how God is involved. Now, I would like to hear what they're saying. I really would. This would be really interesting. What would you say on Christmas Day? This was my experience, if you don't mind. A little town called Flossdorf,
And I asked our man Flossdorf here once what he knew about it on the Rural River. And he said, oh boy, well, I know about Flossdorf over there. Named after my family, he claimed. Yeah. But how do you get to Flossdorf? You run across beef fields. And it's under observation. And how do you get across the beef field? Well, hey, can you stand this a minute? You want to know what a chaplain did, I'll tell you. I think they're still doing it, too, the way I tell. Here's the little Roar River, the Rhine's up here.
Rare, but we call it Roar, I don't know why. Then there's a little town, Flossdorf, with little street deals like this. And out here, I remember Düsseldorf, or I don't know, some, no, that's the larger town. This is a small little thing, Gerensweiler, I think, yeah, as they call it. How do you get in here? This is under observation. It's a mile from here over here. And it's over here at a gun. You come up through a little pass here, defile, it's not in sight. You get into this town, and you get the word right at the crossroads. They program you. Now, usually the fellows over here know you're coming, and they're looking for you. You get back here, out of town, you get a running start. That's when the old throttle goes down the floorboard on a Jeep. And that's when you're glad you didn't take time to break in the Jeep, but you ran it wide open the day you got it, brand new. And that's what they did, too. They wanted them to go loose. And the GIs would go out by the bunkers and pile sandbags until the thing went right down on the tires and would leave it overnight. Make the spring suffer. So, you get a run, he holds all traffic off. MP right here holds all traffic off, and you go through town roaring. And you bounce out of that little old town man heading for it. And the trick is that if you run real fast, slow down, throw it into second gear, speed up, and do like this with your pace, maybe they won't be able to quite time the mortars on you. And this was a big thing. They practiced this, these Jeep drivers. And by the time you got here, you begin to hear the mortars come from over here. See?
And bow, 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 bow.
And the guy over here says, and he'd hold traffic, and you'd come through like everything and hit the corner as fast as you could, and maybe you'd run the other way and stop before you got out of town. And then you jumped out of your Jeep and dug in because just for fun, they'd throw some more. And keep your guys headed down. Bang, bang, crack, crack. And you were already down in the basement. Now, here's Christmas Day, December 25th. And as you work your way up the street to the church, here is a fellow watching over there the pillboxes. There's some movement. You get into an old building. Church had no roof on it, so you go across the street into the parish house. And then right outside the window, wham, 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 a whole clip right of an M1 goes. And this fellow who's standing under walks into church, blowing his rifle. He says, I think I made them duck down. They'll keep quiet for a while. And he comes into church, and then you get into peace on earth, the will of the man. And there are rifles on the floor when you give communion. And now there's where you have to put the pieces together. And I'm telling you, this is where your theology broadens out. And where you begin to see the whole big ache and pain and grief that's in man and the whole merciful intention of God to put back to rights. And how this eschatology means a whole lot then, already, not yet. And the hope of our glory, see? And this is how this thing comes together. And I'm sure the chaplains in Vietnam are seeing beneath the dimension of the stuff that we see on the surface. And I would hope that they are ministering to these men, and possibly this is the way, or one of the reasons why the men over there can maintain morale, and why they can stay in this thing with hope, and stick this thing out, and trust that God's going to work some good out of this evil thing. That's what you're for, fellas. Boss, I didn't get the 10th sheet until right now. Here it is.
I have two announcements.
All right, sir.
Number one, the next session will be 2 weeks from today. because some of them will be gone next Thursday, we are getting a naval chaplain in the